Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, September 20th, 2021, and this is episode 239 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the still first place San Francisco Giants. We are coming to you live on Facebook like we usually try to do every Monday or so. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today, Eric Nathanson. How about those Raiders, man? How's Vegas reacting to this start?
It's awesome. They're 2-0. The whole town's buzzing about them right now. Oh my God, Super Bowl bound. Can they beat the Chiefs?
It's going to be Raiders and Niners and Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. We're two games in the season. We'll see how it goes, you know. Yeah. So I'm just happy we still have Giants baseball to watch. 12 games, man.
Yep. The beginning of the season, there's no way we thought that we'd be still talking about the Giants being relevant with 12 games left, but of course it's much more than just relevance that the Giants are in right now. They are still in first place, still have the best record in all of the majors, but let's go ahead and break down the week that was. The Giants went 4-3 this week, so, you know, not a spectacular week, but anytime you can be above 100 in a week is fine with me. The problem is the team that keeps chasing them, and they had a better week. So they shaved a game and a half off the lead, and so it's down to a measly one game. But the Giants stand at 97-53. Think about that, Eric. We talked about this last week, but Bruce Bochy never won more than 94. And here Gabe Kapler is at 97 with 12 to play. I mean, you know, if they go 6-6, he ties Dusty Baker's 103. You know, if they go above 500, he sets the all-time franchise, well, city of San Francisco record. And that still may not be enough to win the West. And it's just, again, shades of 93. We'll get to that in maybe next week, you know, because it's just too much to think about right now. There's just so much at stake and so many games left. 12 is a lot when you have a one-game separation, so you know, who knows what's going to happen. But they split with San Diego. That was unfortunate, only in the sense that they had won the first two of the series. And, of course, they had won 9 in a row at that point. But, you know, the Giants hadn't won 9 in a row since 2004. So you can't keep expecting a team to win, you know, 15 in a row. Why didn't they win 15 in a row? They suck. But they took 2 out of 3 from the first-place Braves. Again, not a bad week, but their lead was trimmed. I don't know what to say. I thought this was interesting. Yesterday on my drive after the game, I was listening to Bill Lasky on the post-game show, and his crew brought up a stat that astounded me. The Dodgers have only lost 4 series in the second half. 3 of them are to the Giants. The other one was to Colorado at home.
And that was just the other day. That was just like last weekend. That wasn't even... Oh, my God. The All-Star break was over 2 months ago right now. We thought the Giants were on a roll. I can list off the top of my head probably Pittsburgh, St. Louis, you know what I mean, series that the Giants have lost this, the Braves series back, you know, a few weeks ago.
Yep.
It doesn't get any easier when you have a team like the Dodgers, you know, chasing you down. I keep seeing the numbers of, you know, well, now the Dodgers have to go, you know, if the Giants go 6-6, the Dodgers have to go 8-4 to win the division outright, or 7-5 to, you know, force a playoff. And I think the way the Dodgers are playing, we know 6-6 won't get it done.
No.
You know, 103 wins is that shades of 93. You know, if the Giants win 105 games and still manage to lose the division somehow, I mean, at that point, you kind of got to just tip your cap to the Dodgers, don't you? I mean,
absolutely. At some point, you know, if that were to happen, if somehow the Giants get the wild card game, regardless of what happens in that game, if they do win 103, 104, 105 games and they lose the division, I mean, all you can say is like, look, the Giants beat the Dodgers 10-9 in the season series, so they took care of business there, and they won the most games I've ever won in San Francisco. What else can you do? I mean, at that point, you, like you said, you just got to tip your cap and go, Dodgers had one of their best seasons ever. I mean, a couple years ago, they won 106, but of course, no one was even close, so it wasn't, something as a point of discussion. What can you say? They're a juggernaut. They got healthy. Scherzer's on a roll. Kershaw's back. They got Urias and Bueller. I mean, there's no wonder the experts are still picking them to win the World Series, or they have the best odds right now. I mean, the Giants have the best record. They are probably the better overall rounded team. They're better than the Dodgers as parts of the whole. But again, when you get into a playoff series, especially a five-game or seven-game series, that murderer's row of starters can just roll over a team and win two or three in a row. And I think that is the main reason why they're still favored over the Giants right now. Because a lot of people are – we talked about it last week. A lot of people are wondering about it. But I really just think that's it. I mean, on paper, they're just – they're scary. That said, the Giants still beat them 10 out of 19 times. The Giants have this knack of slaying the Goliaths, like Detroit in 2012. They've been the underdog and – all 11 series they've played, postseason series, and they won 10 of them. This is right up the Giants' alley, to be honest. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And the one thing, though, and I know that we all talk about the similarities to 93, but the one thing where we diverge from 93 is the Giants didn't have some huge lead this year.
No.
There was no 9.5 game lead to blow. They never got more than four or five games really ahead of the Dodgers. And then when they did, the Dodgers closed the gap within a week again just by going on a run. Yeah. And now I see why when you bring up the numbers that they've lost four series in the second half, which really shows why. So, I mean, that's where to me, I know everybody's freaking out. Oh, my gosh, 93 all over again. But it diverges in that way because, A, you have the backup of the wild card. But, B, it's just not the same type of thing. They didn't blow it. The Dodgers didn't – I mean – I guess the Max Scherzer trades, the Fred McGriff trade.
Maybe.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say. They didn't necessarily do it, but seeing how it is now, and I don't think we have any point at this, any choice at this point, but to kind of just trust Kapler that they're going to get it done.
Yeah.
I mean, they have four three-game series left, and they've won so many three-game series this year. The whole mantra is win two of three, win two of three, and I can't see if they win two of three in every series the rest of the way. I mean, that puts them at 8-4. That's got to be good enough to win the division.
Yeah, because then the Dodgers have to go 9-3 to tie them for game 163. But, I mean, the way the Dodgers have been playing, I wouldn't put it past them. But again, right. If the Giants go 8-4 and they tie, again, you got to tip the cap to the Dodgers and go, Jesus, they just were relentless and they do what they do. When you look at the schedule, a lot of people were pointing to the Brewers series, but as like, oh, that's going to be tough for the Dodgers. It's not going to be tough for the Dodgers. The Brewers aren't going to start their main starters. They're going to be set for the playoffs. They can't move up or down in the seeding. They're going to take that weekend off. I'm not saying they're going to lay down, but they're not going to be pitching Barnes and Woodruff and trying their hardest. Let's be honest, Eric. So that last series, unfortunately, advantage Dodgers.
They might still throw them, but just for five innings, just to get work, because the NLDS doesn't start until that Friday.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It being a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, I can totally see them wanting to get work on Friday and Saturday with the guys that are going to start the next Friday and Saturday. But that's
no, you're
all
right. They probably won't take it all off, but yeah, they're not going to go deep or treat it like it's a must win because they're going to be sitting there pretty able to set up their rotation.
And I was going to say, the Giants, they have 6 of 12 games against the Padres. And the Padres, I'm going to roll right into it here because Padres, they're totally fading. I mean, for a team that was there in the wild card race all season long, they have fallen to 3.5 games back in the wild card. And the Cardinals have won 8 in a row and now have a 3-game lead over the Reds for the second wild card. And it's just stunning that now the Giants have to face a team that is fighting for their playoff lives instead of a team everybody thought might be coasting into that wild card game. So it doesn't make it any easier with these 6 games. And I think the 4 games from last week kind of showed that. Having a series where they won the first 2, and then the Padres showed some resilience. They really did. And they came back. They had great at-bats all series. So, it's not going to be easy for the Giants to take these games from the Padres. They are in a, it's pennant race baseball. That's the one advantage the Dodgers have is they don't have to fight any teams that are in a pennant race. Everybody who they're playing is pretty much set in where they're going to be.
Yeah, the Padres, I mean, there's I wouldn't call it infighting. I watched the breakdown of that little dugout yelling match that Machado reamed Tatis on. And it wasn't fighting. I think a lot of people thought it was fighting, and they were all angry about the wild card and how crappy they're doing. It had nothing to do with that. They broke it down. You could hear the voice. They have all the subtitles. Machado basically was somewhat scolding Tatis because he basically got all, about a called third strike, which, by the way, did clip the top of the zone. It was a strike, but Tatis didn't agree with the call because it was a curveball dropped down. Yep. And he did one of those, like, he didn't argue with the ump, but he showed up the ump by standing in the box and looking up at the sky for a few seconds before turning around, expressing his disgust. Basically, Machado yelled at him and was like, "It's not about you. We all saw it. We all know what happened, but it's not about you. It's a team. You're the best player in the world. Everybody in this stadium knows you're the best player in the world. Basically, act like it. Go out there and play ball." And that's basically what he said. And so it was kind of like a pep talk, like, dude, stop being a prima donna. You're an awesome player. Go out there and show it. And Tatis, well,
Machado's learned that lesson himself, though. Think yep. about it. He, you know, when he was traded to the Dodgers a couple years ago, he was the villain, towards the end of his time in Baltimore. He speaks from experience when he's yelling at Tatis. I thought that was great. That was a veteran player mm-hmm. going over to a young player saying, check yourself. It's not about you. It's about the team. It's about something bigger. And when you see stuff like that going on in San Diego, you kind of figure they're done. Honestly, you do, because the Giants, the Dodgers, that kind of crap's never going to happen. You know, these teams all know that the sum of the parts is bigger than the one part. And it was funny as hell. Honestly, it was funny as hell to watch Machado and Tatis go at it, because it just showed the pressure of everything was coming down on the Padres. I mean, they laid an egg this weekend. So it really was a lot of fun to watch. Tatis not realize his place just yet. And I'm not saying that as a, I love the young, the brash, all that stuff. That's not what I'm saying at all. But you can't get tossed from a game when you're in the middle of a pennant race, which is exactly what Machado's point was.
Yeah. And, you know, that series, they're not mathematically eliminated yet, but that series basically ended their season, because that was the Cardinals. They were the ones that inserted themselves in the wild card race last week by winning all this. And so if the Padres had taken just one of those three, they'd only have what? They'd be 1.5 games back of St. Louis right now. And actually, I think the Reds would still be there. But anyway, point being, they'd still have a more reasonable shot, even if they had just won one game. Obviously, if they had won two, they'd be well in the mix. But now with 3 and 3.5 back of two teams, sayonara. They're not gonna leapfrog both teams. And what's crazy about it is that the Dodgers have a horrendous history against the Cardinals in the postseason. That's like their kryptonite. And all my Dodger friends are like, as long as we don't face the Cardinals in the postseason, we'll be fine.
Really?
And what's interesting is there is a possibility now, if the Giants can somehow clinch the West, it'll be St. Louis. Well, it could be. I shouldn't say it will be. It could be St. Louis at Los Angeles for the wild card game. And a lot of Dodgers fans are going to freak out about that, which would be sweet to see.
That would be awesome. I mean, where do the cards come from anyways? You know what I mean? Like, nobody was talking about them.
And, like, Cincinnati and San Diego were floundering, so just kind of meh. And they just went, hello, we're here. Yeah. So, I mean, cards fans were like, what the hell? Okay, we'll take this. Yeah, really, really odd. But, hey, you know, it's... The Giants have had good success against the Cardinals, as we know, in the postseason. So it very well could be St. Louis coming to San Francisco for a game. The wild card is something all teams agreed to, and one of the main impetuses of the first wild card, when it was just a one-team system, was that 93 Giants season. Major League Baseball looked at it and then said, crap, we can't have the second-best team in the majors not make the playoffs. That's ridiculous. So that's how the wild card was born. The problem with that is a weird season like this one, where the two best teams are in the same division. And it's rarely going to happen, but unfortunately for the Giants and the Dodgers, both, it's happening this year. So one of those teams is going to win 103, 104 games, 105 games, be in the wild card, potentially lose it to a team that's 20 games behind them. And that's it. The season's over, baby. And it's just... That's what they all signed up for. That's the rules, and that's the breaks. So it is what it is.
I mean, it's just we never thought it would affect us as Giants fans. I think that's why we focus on it, just all of it, so much.
Yeah, a little hypersensitive.
We just didn't think we'd be here. Yeah.
All right, well, let's go ahead and look at the quickly review these games here. We got a little bit of a hard stop today. So game one against San Diego back on Monday, they won that one 9-1. And, you know, they had this during this 9-game winning streak, they had quite a few games where it was very anti-torturous. They actually had quite a few games because they had scored 6 runs or more in 10 consecutive games through the streak plus a loss. So most of these, or I shouldn't say most, but a lot of these games are just like cruise control. And this was one of them. They won 9-1, and they clinched a postseason berth on Monday. That meaning, you know, at least a wild card game. It was a bullpen game, ironically enough, against Yu Darvish. But Yu Darvish has just been having a bad second half. He allowed a 5-run first, 8 earned runs overall. The Giants hit 4 home runs. And the bullpen started with Leon, then it went to Garcia, Littell, Alvarez, Duvall, and then Castro. It was just a sweet game all around.
Yeah, it was what you want out of a clinching game. You want it to be a party. And who expected them to actually have a party? I thought they'd just chill.
I did not. So I'm going to skip the Longo home run, but here is, now this isn't champagne on the field quite yet, but this is the moment that the Giants did clinch their first postseason berth in 5 years.
Got him. And that's the ball game, and for the Giants, they are.
Well, there you go. Technical difficulties. The video just froze on me. But headed y'all, the there he goes.
For the first time since 2016.
Well, there you go. Having difficulties there.
The funny thing about that whole clinching is it was all over after the first inning. You mentioned the 5-run first inning off of Darvish. They just absolutely demolished him. And it's the earliest the Giants have clinched. And I was a little surprised that the champagne came out. I really was. I mean, were you surprised that they partied a little bit? And then did it make you worry for the next day? Because I know it did for me. But, I mean, I was surprised that they were popping bottles. But I also enjoyed watching all of it.
Yeah, I think the reason it's an interesting conundrum. I think, you know, I think of it this way. Because I was a little concerned about that, too, because they did show the champagne. I saw Johnny Cueto's live Instagram. I don't know if you saw that. But he went. No. I get notifications when he goes live. So I was like, ooh, Cueto's live. And they just clinched. So I flipped it on. And sure enough, I mean, they had formed a circle in the clubhouse. And just one guy would go in the center. And then everybody would spray him. And then another guy would go in the center. And, like, the music was going. They're all bouncing in the music. And then they'd spray him, right? So it was definitely a full-blown, like, postseason-type celebration in the locker room. And it concerned me a little bit, but at the same time, I kind of reset my expectations going, look, there are a few veterans on this team that have been through this before. This is nothing new to them. I think with the young guys, this hypothetically could be the only chance to celebrate when you think about it. And I think that's why they let it happen. Because if it was reversed, if the standings are reversed and the Giants were, let's say, the Cardinals fighting for a wild card, and they clinched like this on the second to the last day of the season, they absolutely would party like this. And everybody would be like, oh, they totally deserve it. They got the wild card. But on the flip side, it's like, why are they celebrating? They got like 16 games left and they need to go for the West. Well, again, if they don't win the West and they have to play the wild card game and then they lose that wild card game, that's it. They're done. That's could be their only chance to celebrate. So I think the veterans and the staff kind of allowed it to happen, but probably also said, hey, young ones, get your little jollies off for here, you know, half an hour. But, you know, this is, we got way more to go, but you can have a taste. They're like, here's a taste.
You know, it's funny that I didn't even think of the concept of this might be their only celebration. Honestly, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the Dodgers didn't celebrate, but the Dodgers have also won the division eight straight years. It's such a difference. The one thing that stuck out to me during the post game, Gabe was talking, and he said something that really kind of caught my ear about getting out of the way and just letting the guys do what they do. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been the philosophy for the whole season, it sounds like. Like, yeah, we're going to mix and match and do the things we have to do from the managerial and the coaching standpoint. But there are times that they just step back and let the boys, the Giants, the players do what it is they want to do. And I thought it was a really, really good call by Gabe to, you know, he seems to have the pulse of this team. He seems to understand when they need a break, when they need to step on the gas and things like that. And I thought it was just, you know, another good sign from Gabe and the fact that everybody was so excited. And Brandon Crawford, Brandon Belt standing in that center of that circle waving his C around as he's getting showered with champagne. That was the highlight for me, because the belt captaincy thing to me is just the funniest thing that's happened all season. But it was
fantastic.
It was great to see them enjoying it. And you're right, there were young kids that have never, you know, done it before. They were interviewing some of those guys after the game, and they were like, "Well, I've never done this. This is awesome. I didn't know to go get my goggles." And well, I mean, don't worry, buddy. 10 years ago, they didn't have – well, maybe 15 years ago, they didn't have goggles.
Yeah, it was like, feel the burn, baby. Feel the burn. Not anymore. Yeah,
David Ortiz, I think, is really what, you know, set that on his trail, because he was such a big one for the thing. Because those guys in the 80s, they burned like real men.
Yeah. They burned like real men. Oh, man. So, I don't know. I thought about that a little bit harder that night, and that's – yeah, it's just – my theory is, like, it's just not a guarantee that they're going to have another party. So let some of the young kids get it now. Because if they did lose the wild card, I don't know if it would be regret that they didn't party. That's not it. It's just in the moment, I think it was like, let them taste it a little bit. Maybe that will fuel them to want more. I don't know. I'm not sure. So game two, they did. They came right out. No hangover at all. Won 6-1. Their ninth consecutive win. The longest since 2004. Disclafani threw 6.2 of one-run ball for the win, and Buster Posey came up to the plate and did what Buster Posey's been doing this year. Oops. Let me go ahead and share this here. There he is. Mr. Posey. Hopefully this won't have technical problems. I think my computer's having a baby or something.
Deep left center.
Yeah.
It's my fault.
I will stop
it's
with the
house. Because highlights.
I was late. Profar looks up.
It's having some sort of frame rate issue today. Sorry, everyone. I will stop.
It's all my fault. I was late to the show, and so Chad probably had them loaded up, and so they've been sitting there on the computer for a while.
You know what's funny? Totally is I actually think that's part of it, is they've been hanging here, and I think, like, the buffer got filled up, or the cache is messed. I don't know.
I'm not trying. Yeah, I'm being honest. I do think part of it's my fault. Sorry, folks.
It's all
had
good,
some
man.
Personal things.
It's all good. So yeah, they won 6-1, no worries there. And you're thinking, man, this team's going to win 10, 11 in a row. The Padres are just not playing well. They're going to do it. But suddenly, if you told me they were going to score 6 runs again in the next game for their 10th consecutive game, I'd be like, oh, they're going to win again. Especially because, you know, they've just been rolling. But no, it was a bullpen game. And unlike the previous bullpen game, it just didn't happen. They allowed 5 runs in the first, like, 2 innings. Leon gave up 2, Garcia 2 unearned, and Littell a run. And they were just down, and they fought back. They hit 4 home runs again. And I think it was only, like, the third loss they've had ever. They're, like, 35-3 now when they hit 4 more home runs. You don't expect a team to lose when you hit 4 home runs. That's a little ridiculous, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it was a bullpen game. So like you said, you know, you can't – they've done so many of these lately. It was bound to have a couple of guys go bad that day and, you know, Leon and didn't start – was it Leon?
No,
Leon only lasted 3 batters, which was the opposite of what he lasted on Monday when he went 2 innings in the clinching game. Because he immediately gave up a double and a single. So they got him out there to work with the lefty, Yordan Garcia. So it was a bullpen game that finally bit them in the butt is really what it boiled down to. You have to wonder if they had a starting pitcher or just better pitching that day with 4 home runs and 6 runs, could they have won? Probably, but just not the way it happens. And you got to give credit to the Padres. In these last 2 games, they had great at-bats. They were very patient. They attack balls in the zone. They didn't expand their zone. They waited for their pitches, and they took advantage of opportunities. Basically, they played Giants baseball for a couple of days.
They did, and that's what they did on game 4. They lost 7-4. Kevin Gausman continues to struggle. He's had a couple of okay starts, but he gave up 4 earned runs in 5 innings on 8 hits. It was a homer by Longo, but Kevin Gausman is a guy that, you know, we expected to have something like a 4 ERA this year. And he's obviously well below that overall. His first half was absolutely spectacular. He was in Cy Young contention, especially with DeGrom going out. Now he's well out of Cy Young contention because his second half has just been awful. His ERA is over 5 in the second half. I mean, think about that, Eric. I mean, he's over 5. You just don't think of that from Kevin Gausman. So the rotation for the playoffs, if they get that far with the series, he's going to be a starter. But it's just, I don't have the confidence in him anymore. And I haven't looked at the spin rates and everything since they started busting down on the illegal substances. But there is a link between when that ban came into effect and his performance stats. And again, I'm just wondering, was he a guy relying on that stuff? On some you know, spider tack or whatever he was using or might have been using? There's definitely a correlation. Doesn't mean causation. Does not. Right. But
it's, well, because I wonder with him, I mean, his pitch is the splitter. I can't see where spider tack helps as much on a splitter.
Not on a splitter. Yeah, it helps better on the sliders and curveballs. But
Right. Because you need the grip. People who have the video can see it. Because you need the grip off the tips of your fingers.
Yeah.
And that's why the spider tack gets used. And a splitter sits deeper in your fingers, so you're not really rolling it off the top of your fingers. You know, it's kind of Gausman coming. Yeah, I didn't have a ball on it next to me. There you go. There's the splitter grip.
Exactly.
And that's why, you know, I get what you're saying, but teams have also been patient. And for all we know, this just might be the real Kevin Gausman, and the one for the last year and a half wasn't. So with you, there's some concern, but, you know, when the playoffs come, the Giants know they have a good bullpen, so if Gausman gets in trouble, they won't be afraid to go to it.
That's the thing about Kapler. He pulled the string right away. There's no – there is – like this game gives up 4 runs in 5 innings. He wouldn't have even lasted that long in a playoff game. It would have been like, oh, you're in trouble? You're out. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely agree with you there.
To do that. So then the Braves come into town, and you're thinking, all right, they've lost 2 in a row. Okay, that's not a big deal, but – Braves are first place. You know, the Giants lost 2 of 3 to them earlier in Atlanta. And game one happened, and that was a wild game. I'm just going to skip forward because of our limited time, but the Giants had a two-run lead, 4-2 in the top of the ninth. And, of course, their closer went on the IL. So we had to rely on Tyler Rogers to close the game. And he promptly allowed 2 one-out singles. And then a 3-run bomb, and Rogers has not done this very often, but when he does, it goes south really quickly, specifically against like LA when he was trying to close that game earlier in the season. And the Braves quickly went up 5-4, and everybody was just gutted. They had already lost 2 in a row to the Padres, and you're thinking, all right, we're going to win this. Tyler Rogers is in there. He's been so good this year. And just hit, bomb. And suddenly you're down by a run. You're just like, what the hell happened? And you're just thinking you're going to your, you know, third straight loss, especially after there are 2 outs in the bottom of the ninth. I'm going to see if this works this time. I'm not going to expand the window and try one more time. But Donovan Solano, who had just come off the injured list from COVID, comes up, and he has a 2-2 count. And the improbable happened here.
Two with two down in the ninth. Deep to left field. Down the line. Adios, Pelota! Down to their final strike. And Donovan Solano launches one into the tunnel. It's tied up!
John Miller is so freaking good.
He's so stunned.
Unbelievable. The crew on the back.
A lot of breakable
background, unbelievable. And yeah, Will Smith, of course, ex-Giant. You could see him bend over right when Solano hit that ball. He was like, ah, crap.
It was interesting listening to Solano after the game. He said he watched the at-bat before him with Wilmer and how Smith just kept hammering him with sliders down and in. And so he said he knew that that's what he was going to attack him with, so he was just ready for that kind of pitch.
That was unbelievable. And then they go to extra innings, of course. They didn't score after that. The Giants did load the bait. Well, let me back up a second. So Crawford got on to lead off the 11th with an error. Around and out, the Braves knew that the Giants' bench was depleted, and they were going to have to go to like a pitcher or someone to pinch hit, or to hit, I should say. And so they went ahead and intentionally walked 2 Giants to load the bases, because that doesn't matter at that point, just as long as you don't walk or hit the next guy. And sure enough, the Giants had no one left on the bench, so they said, well, Kevin Gausman's not that bad? And he goes up there, and what was interesting about it is that he did work a full count. And so obviously the pitcher on the mound is like, well, shit, I mean, I need to throw a strike. You know, he's going to walk in the winning run against a pitcher. That would have been the most embarrassing thing. Well, probably the second most embarrassing thing happened to him. And here's Kevin Gausman with a full count, bases loaded, one out in the bottom of the 11th.
A high fly ball. Peterson backs up. Crawford is tagging. And Crawford is coming. Here comes the throw. And Chief!
Brandon Hug.
It is Kevin Gausman who wins the game.
Unbelievable.
Just the way we thought it would turn out. Resilient.
Resilience.
AF.
Yeah, resilient AF, right?
Well, the interesting thing about that is Kevin Gausman had never hit a fly ball to right field in his life as a major league player.
Oh, my God. This is
the first time he had ever pulled a fly ball in his entire existence. And it happened to win the game. I mean, it's also fascinating. The Giants, with nobody out, got that same kind of pop-up, a shallow pop-up. But they didn't send Crawford because there was nobody out at that time. But yeah, with one out, that is where you force the issue.
Absolutely.
And they did, and Jock's throw was a little up the line, and Gausman became the hero. You know, and it was just so much – what a game. You know, it was frustrating, though, because Logan Webb had one of his best starts of the season. Yeah. He was absolutely filthy on Friday night. He had stuff moving. He got touched up
that
for two runs in the first.
Man. Yes. Guys are swinging at this thing. It's 18 inches off the plate. Like –
it was unbelievable. Yeah. Like, all it did was make me think, oh, good, I hope Logan Webb pitches against these guys in the playoffs. To me, it was his best start just because I thought his stuff was filthy. And then to have them blow it like they did with the Tyler Rogers, Tyler got smoked. Like, all these balls hit off Rogers were over 100 miles an hour, even the outs in the yeah. inning. Mm-hmm. The softest ball in the entire inning was Jock Peterson's fly ball to end pop up to end it at like 86 miles an hour. So I think coming out of that game, yeah, it was great to have the win. It was so much fun with Gausman. It was really a lot of fun. But we learned that Tyler Rogers can't work in the ninth inning anymore.
Yeah,
and you know, with Jake McGee injured, they got to go to Tony Watson or Dominic Leone or Zach Littell. I know they said Leone and Watson will also be in the mix, but Littell's out there as a possibility too if needed. So it was frustrating to see Rogers once again crap out in the ninth. He's got an over 5 ERA in the ninth, and he's under 1 in the eighth.
That's the biggest thing. I hadn't heard the stat anywhere, and I just looked up the splits, and it contributed to it, actually, in the game that they won next, the 2-0 game, right? Alex Wood comes off of COVID, his first start. He goes 3 innings, which was planned because of his stamina is going to be low at this point. Pitched great. No runs by him and 6 innings from the bullpen, and they win 2-0 on a Kurt Casale 2-run single earlier in the game, and that was all the offense they needed. But Tyler Rogers... He didn't have an off day. He came in, but he came in the eighth, where he normally does, and had a great inning. And then Dominic Leone came in and got his second save of the year. And you just said those splits. I mean, 46 and two-thirds innings in the eighth, 5 earned runs for a ERA of under 1. And then in the ninth, about a little less than half as much, 19 and a third innings. But he's given up more than twice as many earned runs, 11 and one more home run, 3, for a 5.12 ERA. This is just highlighting, this isn't, you know, coincidence. This is not just the approach that hitters have, but there's some sort of, you know, all major leaguers talk about it. It's that intangible of having the stuff for a closer. It's a mental thing. And I'm not saying at all that Tyler Rogers doesn't have it. I just think it shows that you do have to have that mental edge in the ninth inning. And you're going to blow games here and there, but it just seems like certain guys aren't necessarily cut out for it.
No, I didn't even see. Did you write down these splits before the show?
I did, yeah.
I didn't even see those. I swear to you, I didn't even see those. I don't have that screen open. I was riffing off of a Brooks Knudsen tweet that told me it was over 5, under 1.
Oh, that's funny.
I didn't mean to steal your stat, is
no,
what
no,
I'm
no,
saying.
Not at all.
I had no idea you wrote that. I hadn't scrolled down that
no,
far.
No, not
but,
at all.
You know, it's true. It's all about mentality. And some guys can get those final. The 27th out is the hardest out to get.
Absolutely.
Some guys are set up to do it and some guys aren't. And, you know, well, the Giants, that was a good game for Casale, yet another shutout. And then you got the chance. You went to the yard yesterday with hopes of seeing a sweep.
I'm laying some stinkers here lately, Eric. Unfortunately, I've lost. I've obviously responsible for it. No, I'm 2-3 on the year and lost three out of the last four games I've gone to, so including these two in a row. But I'm bringing up a picture for those of you on Facebook audio. You can't see it, but maybe I'll post this later. But we were down in the field for the pregame with Kapler. And at one point, Kevin Gausman came up the steps. And so my buddy Ryan Leong stopped him. And I took this quick photo here. Ryan asked him, like, hey, did you keep anything? Did you get like a memento or anything from your sacrifice fly the other night? And he stops. He's all, come to think of it, no. No one gave me anything. And then I said to him, I said, well, you have the memory. And he's all, yeah, there's that. he was in a good mood. He was like smiling and everything. He was totally into it. So I think he was just as surprised as everyone else. It was really, really cool. But yeah, I was able to go to the games, kind of a last minute decision, but went up there, and I gotta say the mood at the park was vibrant, and the weather was great, and Kapler comes in his shorts with all of his tattoos all over his legs, and he sits down and he's like, how you guys doing, everybody? God, I love Sunday mornings. They're the best. Like, he was like in the best mood, and he was just answering all the questions. It was great. He gave an update on Johnny Cueto. He's throwing from flat ground. He'll be throwing at Sacramento soon. Talked a little bit about Dominic Leon and Zach Littell and how they've just got the bulldog mentality, how good they are. Obviously, he cannot reveal any kind of playoff rotation that he may have. There's going to be so many things that relies upon, including the last 12 games of the season. So let alone the playoff rotation, not the playoff rotation, but the rotation for the San Diego series. He said, we're going to have to wait till maybe after the game and maybe Monday until I actually say anything about the San Diego series. So I don't know if we've heard anything about it, but
that's no, where he not is that right I now. Know. Of. I, but, you know, it makes me wonder if Cueto is a possibility for late in the week, and that's why.
Yeah. So here's there's Kapler with his leg tats everywhere. He was like straight up like that. So yeah, it was a wonderful day. I did meet our friend, Steven Risotto. So it was first time meeting him. That was pretty cool. We talked for a little bit. Didn't really chat too much in the press box because we were sitting on opposite sides. I was sitting, however, and Bay Area people will know this guy, the legendary Bruce McGowan, who used to work for KNBR and KCBS. He's got a very distinctive voice. I grew up listening to him all the time, and he's still on the radio as a guest, breaking down Niners or Giants. He's kind of an all-around sports guy. But he happened to be sitting right by me, and he is a talker. Oh, my God. I had no idea. Even Ryan like leaned over and was like, he's a nice guy, but he talks so much. Him and I chatted each other's heads off for 7 innings. Everything from baseball to climate change, the vaccine. It was pretty cool. It's like one of those guys you've listened to your whole life. And you're like, now I'm just talking to him, just shooting the breeze about all sorts of. He started talking about stories. His first game at Candlestick Park in 1973 as a young 23-year-old coming into the smoke-filled press box. They had a keg in the back where all the reporters would just go and just have beer and cigarettes all game. I mean, like, this is really cool, some of the tales he spun. So sadly, it was a very, very, very enjoyable day. It was just a poor result, unfortunately. Just one of those days. But the Braves won 3-0, and Tony Discofani was fantastic, matching zeros with Max Fried for the entire game up until the 7th inning. He allowed a double and then a two-run shot. Then Littell was called in and gave up a solo shot right after that. So the Braves went back-to-back. And then that was the scoring. That was it, 3-0. But I did want to bring up, and it didn't directly cause any runs, I guess you could say, but Chris Bryant's defense in right field, although you and I could not track those balls down, granted, and they weren't super high-percentage fly balls, but those are balls we're used to seeing a Giants right fielder catch, to be honest.
Yeah.
They weren't like diving kind of balls. They were just running over the shoulder kind of things. And he just didn't quite get there. It was just out of reach kind of thing. Steven Duggar had a one in center field. That was a little harder because that was a leap against the wall. And he had just missed it and went behind him for a double. But he had prevented a home run the other day as well by snagging one over the fence and bringing it back. But it didn't directly contribute, but it is, he's had some errors at third, too. So his defense has been a little worse than I would have assumed from this guy.
Yeah, it's been suspect, and I think that it is a result of moving around so much. I think he's fallen into the routine. It's weird that we're talking about his bad outfield play, because I think he's fallen into the routine of being an outfielder, and that's why he's airmailing the ball from third base sometimes.
Maybe.
I should say throwing wide. You know, it's kind of the yips, because it's never airmailed. It's always pulling the guy off the bag up the line. So he seems to overthrow a little bit. But I'm with you. I'm not sure Chris Bryant should be in right field in the playoffs in games at Oracle Park.
There you go.
On the road, I think it's a better idea. But with the way those bricks play, with the way Triples Alley plays, and the way the Archways play, I don't think he... There was a couple times I don't think he should start there. There was a couple times there was one play he was running to the wall, and you could kind of see him expect to hit the wall, and he still had another 2 or 3 feet to go. And so I think it's something he would have made a catch on. So it's frustrating to watch. You know, it's funny because KB, I don't want to say he hasn't contributed, but his name is the first time it came up all show.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. I mean, he's been fine. He's been fine. And I do hope they sign him to a long-term deal. There's just incidents like this where it didn't cost him the game, but his defense was definitely exploited out there. But I did see my first ever cycle. Yeah. Granted, it was the Braves that did it, Rosario.
It's the second one this year. Freeman had one last month.
But it was kind of fun to see. We were coming up his last at-bat, and it was like, oh, this dude only needs a single. And to see him hit it and raise his fist and, you know, point back to the dugout, it's like, you know, it's kind of cool seeing individual achievements like that. That, you know, that was fine, you know, for a day that the Giants just, they couldn't get the bats going. Disco was fine. There was no problems. He had a great performance, and he's looking like down the stretch here, he's going to be a solid member of the playoff rotation, I would say.
My one concern with Disco is he seems to get hurt late in the game, and maybe if it was a playoff game, they would have gone to the bullpen in the seventh inning instead of keeping Disco out there. I don't think pitch counts matter with him. I think it's a matter of fatigue, because he was only at like 80 pitches.
He was at 72 at the beginning of the seventh inning. So he was really low, relative. You know, so everyone was like, yeah, he should be able to make it through the seventh. Double home run. Oh, well. It was a third time.
I don't know if it's
third time through the lineup, too. So, and I tweeted that out. I said, let's see how he does with the third time through the lineup. And sure enough, it just didn't work out. That just happens. But we got to wrap up here in a couple minutes. Just the other things. I did speak briefly to John Miller. That was kind of cool. And his, dulcet tones, Ryan introduced me, and he's all, what was that? Chad King from TortureCast? And I was like, yeah! Didn't record it, but...
I was about to say, you wish
it just
you had
sounded cool. I was like, yeah, John Miller said that. So that was pretty neat. So... anyway, that'll do it for episode 239 of the TortureCast. The Giants have an off day today. They are on their way to San Diego and then Colorado after that. It's going to be interesting. Are the Padres going to lay down like they have been? The Rockies, they went into Colorado and swept them last time, the only team to do so. So we cannot expect a sweep again. There's no way we can expect it. Even winning 2 out of 3 is going to be rough. And with the Dodgers, the way they're playing, they got what? They got the Rockies, the Padres, the Diamondbacks, and the Brewers. Not necessarily in that order. So this is going to be a tough gauntlet, Eric. I think the Dodgers are going to probably easily win 8 of those games. Easily.
Well, you got a prediction for this week? I think the Giants go 4-2 against San Diego and Colorado.
Yeah, I'm going to say 4-2. And the sad thing is the Dodgers could go 5-1 and be tied. But
I mean, they're playing Arizona this week,
I believe.
So
I know.
It's not helpful.
Not good. So, well, that'll do it. You can go ahead and find your podcast, find our podcast. Anywhere you get your podcast or at TorchCast.com, where we post everything there. You can follow us collectively at TorchCast on Twitter, like us on Facebook. Follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits with the number 2 for Eric, and at Willie Dills for the missing Willie Dills Gregory. For Eric, this is Chad signing off. We'll see you next week for episode 240. Until then, have a great week. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TortureCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.